As a content warning before I continue, this episode covers content that may be potentially triggering for some listeners, including violence, blood, and traumatic events. Hey, Pittsburgh. Welcome to From the Newsroom, Trib Live's podcast bringing you top stories straight from our newsroom. This episode, we'll be doing something a little different. Tuesday, April 9th will be the 10-year anniversary of the Franklin Regional stabbings committed by then-student Alex Reibel. Two Trib Life reporters join us as we delve into the harrowing events of April 9th, 2014, when Franklin Regional High School in Murraysville, Pennsylvania, became the scene of a horrific mass stabbing. In this episode, Renata Signorini will recount the chilling details of how the 16-year-old sophomore unleashed chaos, wielding kitchen knives to injure 20 students and a security guard. Also, Trib Life's trending news reporter Megan Swift, who was a Franklin Regional Area student at the time, will shed light on the community's experience and what it was like for her and those around her. I'm Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom. Renata Signorini has been with the Trib since 2005. She's a reporter covering breaking news, crime, courts, and the Gannett area. Renata was one of the reporters who was sent to cover and follow the events at the Franklin Regional School on April 9th, 2014. She and reporter Megan Swift, who was a Franklin Regional middle school student at the time, join us to recount their experience on that day, both as a reporter and as a member of the community. Renata, Megan, hello.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Hi, Zach, thank you.
Thanks for joining me. So, Renata, can you lay out some of the facts of what happened on that day?
So the high school doors opened around 7 a.m. and students could come in and get breakfast before school started and get to their lockers and kind of get ready for the day. And at that time, one of their fellow students was also coming into the school, but he had brought in two kitchen knives. At some point, he got intercepted by the school principal and a security guard when they saw he had the knives, and they were trying to get him to the ground and get the knives off of him, just kind of wrestling in a school hallway. And during that time is when the security guard, John Resitar, got stabbed in the abdomen. And the school resource officers stepped in and called for backup from Murraysville Police around 7:09 a.m., and police got there a few minutes later. And so between all of that happening, the suspect was able to stab 20 students in a first floor hallway, in addition to the security guard, before school officials stopped him. The 20 students ranged in age from 15 to 17. It was probably just mass chaos in that hallway, students running, trying to get away, getting out of the building, and people who weren't hurt, you know, putting pressure on wounds for the students who were injured and trying to get them out to ambulances. And at some point, the school gets evacuated and the students go out to a football field on the school campus, and parents just start kind of flooding the school campus to pick up their kids.
So as a reporter going to get all the information in such a tense time, what did the scene look like for you when you got there?
So by the time I got there, it was probably closer to 8 o'clock, and the media was kept down a hill from the high school. So we really couldn't see anything that was happening at the actual building or outside the building. But there were just tons of parents coming in to that area and them walking around on the road down from the school building with their kids and getting into cars. So reporters could kind of grab the parents and the students, and at that point, just trying to figure out, you know, what happened. Were there any injuries? Just trying to get the basics at that point.
Right. For those who aren't familiar with our field, a lot of times you have to go into very intense or emotionally heavy situations. What helped you keep your focus? What did you keep at the forefront of your mind while working through getting information for this story?
The people in the community were scared. They wanted to know what was going on. And I am kind of that conduit that gets the information from the people who have the information, like the police or the school officials, out to the community. So they know what's going on. It's not just people who have kids at the school, but also just the community wants to know what's happening. Is there anything they can do to help? What are all these police and ambulances doing racing towards the school building? I'm sure that would be a scary thing just to be a regular community member. So while I'm there, I'm just trying to stay calm, see who's available, see what kind of information they have, and then push that information back to the newsroom, to the editors, to be able to get that on our website and out to the community.
I see that throughout some of the pieces of the story and the stories that came after it, there were about 1,200 students and teachers and staffers that flooded onto the football field as administrators and police were evacuating and clearing the building. There were some pretty intense moments that went on through there. And for the sake of the listeners, I will spare some of the details. Let's talk a little bit about some of the people who were injured through the stabbings at the school. Can you give me some of the information on what happened with them?
There were 20 students who were hurt and one security guard. And those students, their injuries range from kind of minor to extremely serious. And four of the students were critically injured, but no one died.
Now, what must the parents in the community have been thinking? And this is a question for both of you, because I know, Megan, you were a student at the time. So if either of you would like to start, tell me a little bit about, from the human side, what was going on then?
For sure. I do want to just start and preface with the fact that I, you know, can't speak for or in place of any of the individuals who were directly affected or their families. Obviously, Murrysville as a community was extremely affected. And as a seventh grade student at the time, who eventually did rise up and start school at the high school, I saw that firsthand. But I do want to acknowledge that I can't speak for those individuals. In terms of the community's response and the climate at the time, I think everyone was confused at first. Personally, I was inside the middle school that morning for jazz band practice, and we were sitting there playing our piece when we started to hear a lot of ambulance sirens. At first, we didn't really think much of it until it was more incessant, right? And my band director said, hey, let's pause. Let me go into my office. Let me check my phone and see if there's anything going on. Sure enough, there was. We were sent to our homerooms at that point. We were told that the buses had been held at the middle school. So myself and another, I'd say like handful, maybe 10 to 20 students who were there for early morning practice with band and chorus were some of the only middle schoolers in the building at the time. And I believe after high schoolers were evacuated from the high school to the football field, they were then brought down to the middle school. So we were in homeroom and we heard that the high schoolers were being brought in. But at that point, we still had no information. I had no idea what was going on. I was just texting my parents on my new cell phone because I had just gotten one. What was going on. And coincidentally, my dad, we live a few minutes away from the high school. My dad had been late for work that morning. And so he rushed over as soon as he started hearing the news. But he, as he tells the story, they wouldn't let him through the police barricade at first because they didn't even realize there were some middle schoolers still in the building. They thought it was just high schoolers who had been evacuated. So I can't speak for my dad either, but the way he recounts the story, he was, you know, terrified for my safety, very confused as to what was going on as a whole. And it was just pretty much chaos there, at least in the middle school campus where we were. But yeah, then I remember heading home with my dad and we put the news on and we just, you know, watched that the whole morning. I don't remember too much about the days that happened after that event, whether it be because it's been blocked out from my and other classmates' memories, I don't know. But I do remember there just being this huge outpouring of love and support in the community, just this togetherness that I would say we didn't have before that event. And I can touch on that more later.
Thank you for painting that picture for us. Another thing that I wanted to note that around this time, there had been similar types of attacks at schools. Would you like to talk a little bit about that as well, Megan?
For sure. So following the attack, I want to say it was a few years down the line. I remember actually sitting in high school when when this article came out, releasing the manifesto that Alex had in his locker. I guess police had found it in his locker. And I remember we read it in class. We were just sitting there. I think it was during lunch the one day that we read it. And in that manifesto, he cited the Columbine High School shooting that happened in 1999. It left 15 dead, including two students responsible for the attack, which was one of the deadliest school shootings in American history. And reading that, like seeing those handwritten words, I believe I was in 10th grade at the time, 9th or 10th, you know, reading that as such a young student, I think that was the first time, at least for me, it really clicked, like, whoa. You know, this happened in our high school, in our community, and the weight of that, I think, sunk in for the first time, especially reading like his personal handwriting, citing that that incident in Colorado. And then, you know, other people drew comparisons to the Sandy Hook Elementary School shootings as well. And those took place in Connecticut in December 2012, left 26 people dead and two injured at the school. Obviously, here at Franklin Regional, we were very blessed and very lucky that no one died.
Renata, in the weeks following the attacks, what was it like covering the story that gained national attention? I noticed throughout researching the story that many large news organizations had stories covering the same event. So what was it like competing with the national media outlets?
On the day after the stabbings, I was sent to be at the high school extremely early because our editors figured that national television outlets were going to be at the school doing their live broadcasts in the morning. So I was up there, and there were some people there. So that day and the days after, it was just kind of an onslaught of information, seeing what the national media and even local outlets were reporting, if it was something we needed to follow up on, if it was something we could kind of let go, seeing who other outlets were talking to as far as victims or families go, also trying on our own to see if we could talk with those people. It was a lot of pressure to keep up with that and make sure that we had anything important that another news outlet was reporting. And on the actual day, I appeared in an Associated Press photo from the scene. I don't think the photographer knew that I was a reporter. I just looked like someone who was walking through the campus with my phone up to my head, maybe looking like a parent, worrying. And I also was on MSNBC by phone, just kind of talking about the situation, what I knew at the time, and also just about Murrysville in general, what the community was like.
Throughout the following days of the original story, there were a few other stories that were written, ranging from the response times and the actions taken by medical personnel to student vigils. Let's move on now to what happened to the actual assailant. Let's talk about the sentencing of Alex Reibel. So on the day of the event, Reibel was arrested and driven to a hospital from the Murrysville police station. He was taken there for the treatment of wounds in his hands. He returned to the scene wearing a hospital gown. Our director of visuals, Sean Stipp, also clued me into the fact that there was a picture of Rybal where he reappeared in his hospital gown without shoes, which raised a little bit of contention, highlighting the chaos of the event. In the years following, Rybal was initially charged with 4 attempted homicides and 21 aggravated assaults. In 2017, Rybal pled guilty to 43 counts of attempted murder and aggravated assault. Renata, can you talk us through the January 22nd sentencing by Westmoreland County Judge Chris Feliciani?
I covered the sentencing along with one of our other reporters, and I was tasked with going in and out of the courtroom, updating the editors with what was happening, and posting to social media while the other reporter was in there taking notes, and he was going to kind of lead the story that we would have online and in the newspaper the next day. The hearing was in one of Westmoreland County's prettiest courtrooms. The walls are painted green. There are huge curtains on the windows, and there's a lot of ornate architecture and woodwork. And the courtroom was packed. School officials, victims, their families, and of course the family of Alex Rybal as well. During that hearing, Alex made a statement to the court. He was handcuffed and shackled, wearing a blue jail uniform, and he had a gold chain around his neck with a cross dangling from it. He stood up and walked to the witness stand and read from it. Whenever he read that statement, he implored people to not make the same mistakes that he did. He also asked people with mental illness to seek treatment. My biggest mistake was falsely believing that if I took revenge, I would be happy, he said during that statement. He also talked about bullying during that statement and said that he regretted trying to deal with his mental health issues himself rather than seeking help. Police told us there were never any reports made related to bullying by Alex or his family, and that's kind of what the judge also decided during the hearing.
So at the end of the sentencing, Westmoreland County Judge Chris Feliciani sentenced Rybal to 23.5 to 60 years in state prison. In 2020, Rybal's legal team offered an appeal. The court denied his appeal in 2020. He will be eligible for parole before his 40th birthday. Now that we know what happened to the assailant, let's talk about healing with time for the students that were affected. So, for all of the people that were affected in the community, did this event cast a shadow over the remainder of the students' lives at Franklin Regional?
I think it probably did, but I think there have been a lot of efforts to get everyone back to normal, kind of move past what happened, while also realizing it is something that happened to them. In the aftermath of the stabbing, the hallway and classrooms were cleaned up, and school officials tried to get back to the normal class routine. But beyond that, there's the normal things that happen whenever you're in school, going to prom, starting a new school year, graduation. So that's something that the people who were involved, and even just anyone who was at the school, had to go through while this was still something in their mind or in their past. One of the most severely injured students allowed myself and a photographer to visit with him and his date at his home. And I believe the photographer rode along in the limo with him, and it was just a way for him to kind of triumph over what had happened to him. He was a well-known person. He is a well-known person in the community, so the way he was received whenever he got introduced at the Grand March. It was extra applause and cheers, just as with all of the victims of the attack who were attending prom that year.
Were younger students that weren't necessarily in that school at that time, Megan, what was that like in the years past or the years since the attack?
I really do want to commend the staff at Franklin and the teachers and, you know, everyone involved in making us as younger students coming up into the high school in the next few years following this feel really safe and feel really cared and loved for. That's at least how I felt. And I think that is really a testament to the way that Franklin was able to rebuild in the aftermath of these horrific events. I'm very thankful that myself and my classmates were able to feel, still welcomed and still feel safe. In the years following the incident, whenever I got up into the high school, they had implemented bag checks. So we waited in a line every morning. I was always dropped off. I never rode the bus. So you'd wait in the line and your bag or bags, plural, would be searched by either like a principal, an officer, a school official, basically. And even like instrument cases were searched as well. Like my saxophone, I brought it in. They would have me open the case, make sure there was nothing in there. And I know also following the incident that a second door buzz was added. So you have to be like buzzed into the building in order to get indoors. But I will bring up the fact that, like, obviously this was in-house. You know, Alex was a student, and I think that is what really scared us as a student body the most. It's like, you know, you can do all of these, you can take all of these measures to prevent, someone from coming inside the school. But there is still that, I think, that lingering fear of something like that happening. In terms of rebuilding following the incident, students returned to school on Wednesday, April 16th, 2014, and people stood outside with signs of encouragement and love for the students returning. And as a community in Murraysville, that year heading into the summer, since it was the end of the school year, there was a T-shirt campaign. It was FR Strong. Myself and I'd say all my classmates have those T-shirts still. It was a really touching reminder of that togetherness, the community that was created in Murraysville following this. And we also signed a huge banner. It was current students, anyone in the community, and I believe alumni. Some alumni came back to sign as well. And it was then hung in the high school cafeteria, literally for the next 10 years.
Well, Megan and Renata, thank you both for helping me retell this story of the resilient students at Franklin Regional High School.
Thanks for having us.
More information on school attacks. According to CNN, there have been at least 16 school shootings in the U.S. this year, 13 of which were on K-12 school grounds and 3 on college or university campuses. Democrats introduced the School Shooting Safety and Preparedness Act in 2023, which aims to direct the National Center for Education Statistics to produce an annual report on indicators of school crime and safety. It's unlikely this iteration of the bill will be enacted in the 118th Congress. On bullying, in 2021, Democrats introduced the Safe Schools Improvement Act, which would have targeted bullying by requiring states to direct their local education agencies, LEAs, to create policies for the prevention and prohibition of bullying and harassment in elementary through secondary school students. Unfortunately, the bill died in the 117th Congress. For stories like these and more top news, visit triblive.com. To hear more from Renata and Megan, you can check out their author pages on triblive.com as well. Once again, I am Zach Gibson, and this is From the Newsroom.